Hey, you're tuned in to the Verve Podcast live from the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada. Thanks for listening, and viva the Verve.
Man, I'm still excited that you guys are here, but let's just be honest for a minute, because it's got to be a little weird for you, right? I mean, you got to be a little bit nervous. Like for instance, right now, you don't know me, you don't know anything about me, and we are now stuck together for the next 30 minutes. It's almost like you're on a blind date with a pastor. And that is no one's idea of a good time, right? There is no reality TV show coming out called Blind Date with a Pastor. And so what I thought I'd do to break the ice on our little blind date is just share a little of my story and who I am. So here's me. My mother is Jewish. My father was a professional poker player here in Las Vegas. And so you might guess that they didn't take me to church a whole lot. And you would be right. I actually never went to church, not one single time growing up. And not only that, but as far as I know, I never met a Christian. I must have, but no one ever mentioned it to me or anything. And so growing up, I literally knew nothing about God, Jesus, or Christianity. So I went off to college, and on the Easter morning of my sophomore year in college, I was sitting in my dorm room. I was waiting for my girlfriend. We were going to go out to brunch. She was late, as usual. And so I turned on the TV, and we only had three channels. We didn't have cable. And every channel had on what I consider to be a dumb religious show. And I would have just turned the TV off, except for the last channel I hit looked just like potentially comical. It was this older man. When I say older, I don't mean older. I mean like older, like is he alive kind of older. And he was sitting, but it was just funny. He was like way sunk down in this big red leather overstuffed chair, kind of like this. And I'm like, just kind of laughed. And I was about to turn the TV off, but he started to talk. And I'll never forget what he said. He said, "Now, we've been talking about the last week of Jesus Christ's life. And today we're going to talk about," and then he named something, I don't know what it was because it went right over my head. He said, "Now, most scholars believe that this event happened on the Tuesday of Jesus last week. But today I will prove to you through the evidence that it actually occurred on the Wednesday of Jesus last week." And I heard that, and I thought about it for a minute, and I was like, yes, that is the stupidest thing I have ever heard. I mean, I admit, I don't know anything about Jesus, but if he lived at all, it was like a couple thousand years ago, and you're talking about Tuesday or Wednesday. Seriously. And so I turn off the TV in disgust, knock on the door, went out to brunch. But for the rest of the day, for a reasons I can't understand, I just kept thinking about that guy. Like, all these questions running through my head, like, why do you use the word evidence? How would there be evidence? And who cares, Tuesday or Wednesday? Why? And did anyone ever get him out of that chair? There's just all these questions. And so that night, I was sitting in my girlfriend's dorm room, and I looked up at her bookshelf, and I noticed for the first time that she had a Bible. I was like, "You have a Bible?" And she said, "Oh, yeah, somebody gave that to me years ago. I've never even opened it." And I was like, "Could I borrow it?" And she's like, "You can have it. If you don't want it, just throw it out." I was like, "Sweet." So I took her Bible and I went back to my dorm room. Now, I had never touched a Bible in my life up to that moment. And I didn't really know what to expect, but I guess I had two expectations. The first was that the Bible was not true. I expected I would open it up and just find myths and legends and contradictions, you know, and it just wasn't true. The other expectation I had was that even if somehow it was true, and I thought 0% chance, but even if it was true, it wouldn't matter to me. It would be irrelevant to me because I assumed that I was just too bad for God. You know what I mean? Like even if there was a God and Jesus and all this stuff, like I was just too messed up, too sinful, I had gone too far for God to care about me, and so it would be irrelevant to my life. I mean, I looked at my life and I was like, I started getting drunk consistently in sixth grade. I started smoking pot in eighth grade. I started doing speed before school and during school almost every day in 10th grade. I got arrested when I was 15. The police showing up at my house was a regular occurrence. I had a friend who had a neighbor who grew corn, like all these cornfields, and I discovered once, by mistake, that he was growing pot in the middle of his cornfields, so I would go and steal his pot and sell it at school. So I was like this odd drug dealer who got my drugs from a cornfield. And so I just looked at my life, and I was chasing girls, manipulating people, and I looked at my life, and I'm like, even if there's a God, he wouldn't want to have anything to do with me but I was curious because of the old dude in the chair. So I opened the Bible. Now, I didn't know how the Bible was set up or structured, you know, but I assumed it would be like the TV guide by day and time because of the whole Tuesday-Wednesday debate that was apparently tearing up Christianity. And so I opened it, and I got ready to read, and I thought it would read like a tall tale. I was sure the first line would say, "Once upon a time, there lived a man named Jesus who did nice things for people and did miracles, and he healed blind people, and he had a blue ox named Babe, and he could lasso a tornado," and I would roll my eyes and throw out the Bible, you know, because I've read those before. And so I was stunned when I read the Bible, and what it actually says is, at this time, in this place, Jesus did this thing. And then at this other time, in this certain town, when this guy was the mayor of the town, Jesus came into town and he did that thing. And over, time, place, what he did, time, place, what he did. And I thought, well, there would be evidence. If you give a time and a place, you can go back and find out if that really happened. There'd be all kinds of ways to study that. And so I was intrigued, and I looked at it a little bit more, and finally I decided, I need to know. Like, I've got to know. And what I assumed is that it wasn't true. I still totally thought that. And I thought, I can study the evidence, and I could prove it's not true and spend the rest of my life making fun of Christians for believing in something that I could prove was false. Now, I was a pre-law major. I did end up going to law school, so I'm kind of this odd pastor who went to law school and now is doing this, and I don't know how that happened. But I went to law school, so I was into evidence, and I was like, I can do this. And so I started going to the law library, and I assumed that no one had ever tried to study the Bible and the evidence and try to disprove the Bible. In fact, I had like these images of like my face on the cover of Time magazine, you know, like Vince Antonucci disproves Bible, you know, More at 7. There wouldn't be a More at 7 in a Time magazine. But you know, I'm like, I'm going to be famous for this. And so I start reading, and one of the things, studying the evidence, I quickly discovered was that lots of people had tried to do this. In fact, hundreds and hundreds of people had tried to disprove the Bible. In fact, what I learned was really smart people had. Like, I'm talking Harvard law professors and Oxford historians and like William Ramsey, who's considered the preeminent archaeologist of all time, tried to disprove the Bible. And oddly, all those people ended up proving that the Bible is true and accurate and becoming Christians, which kind of depressed me. I was like, but I was like very steadfast about this. I was like, no, I'm going to do this because I didn't want to become a Christian. And so I just kept studying the evidence and trying to find something to discredit this book. But after months and months of that, I just couldn't. And I was just overwhelmed by the evidence. And I realized it's true. Like the whole thing, the Bible, the whole story about Jesus, it's true. While I was studying the evidence, I was also reading the Bible. I just kept kind of reading through these stories about Jesus. And that's the other thing that stunned me as I read the Bible, was not just that you could, like, there's evidence and you could prove or not prove it, but also I noticed that everywhere Jesus went, the baddest, the worst, like the most messed up, sinful people were drawn to him. And he wanted to be around them. So weirdest thing, like every story is like really broken, messed up, bad, sinful people wanted to be with Jesus and he wanted to be with them, which confused me. I was like, that doesn't make any sense because I'm pretty sure I'm too bad for God. And so why is Jesus hanging around with all these people and why do they want to be with him? But as I continued to read, what I learned is that the Bible claims that God loves everyone and he loves us with a perfect love. Perfect love meaning like that there's nothing a person could ever do to make God love them any more than he does. Think about that. And that there's nothing you could ever do to make God love you any less than he does. Think about that. That God loves us with a perfect love. In fact, the Bible says that this is part of the reason that God sent Jesus, so that we would know and understand and get to see that perfect love that God has for everyone. And that's why Jesus was always hanging around with the bad people. And you know what happened? The religious leaders of the time hated Jesus because of that. They thought like good religious people should only hang out with good religious people. And so they hated him and eventually had him crucified because he hung out with all the bad people and talked about how God loved bad people. One time, they were hitting him with like accusing questions about that. And in response, Jesus told a trilogy of stories. In the New Testament, the book of Luke, Jesus tells three stories in a row. The story of a lost sheep and a lost coin and then a lost son. And the story of the lost sheep has fascinated me since the first time I read it back in that dorm room. I want to read it to you and then talk to you about it for a minute or two. We're going to put it on the screen, and so if you want to read along, you can. So here's the story Jesus tells. Verse 4 in Luke 15. Jesus says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep. So that's the story. But it's interesting. This shepherd has 100 sheep. Now, 100's a lot of sheep, right? I mean, I don't know anything about sheep, but 100's a lot of sheep. I was actually thinking about this. I was like, is there anything I have 100 of? Is there anything you have 100 of? And I realized, well, I have at least 100 books. And if one of you, like, came and stole one of my books, I don't think I'd ever notice. Because I got 100 of them. Right? Or we have any parents in the room? Anybody parents? Yeah? Yeah? What if you had 100 kids? Do you think you'd ever notice if one of them just kind of, no, right? You got 100 of them? I don't think so. My parents, when I was young, had two kids, me and my younger sister, Lisa. And one time when I was 6 years old, my sister was 4 years old, they took us out to dinner, and afterwards they put us in the back seat of the car. This is like mid-70s, and they put us in the back seat, and they didn't have the child safety seats back then. My parents were like, I don't know if we had those then. But my parents didn't seatbelt us in, and I know there were seatbelts back then, so I'm not so sure about that one. But they put us in the back seat, they jumped in the front, started the car, popped in the old 8-track tape. See a couple kids in here, ask your parents on the way home, they will explain. But so they pop in all that HR tape, mid-70s, my parents. It's probably like Neil Diamond's greatest hits. And so the music starts, hands, touching hands, reaching out, touching you, touching me. Do you guys want to sing a little bit tonight? Sweet Caroline. I'm impressed. That was pretty good. All right, we can do things with this. All right, we'll work on that. Very good. So here, and by the way, this story is absolutely true. My dad puts in the old music, or I don't know if it was that song. Everything else is true. Starts the car, puts it into drive, starts pulling out of the parking lot. Little did he know that he hadn't shut my sister's door real well. My sister was leaning against the door. The door opened. My sister fell out of the car. The door quietly swung shut. My parents didn't notice, and I didn't say a word. I just waved goodbye. We get out of the parking lot, start driving down the street. We're going like quarter mile, half mile until before finally my dad goes, where's Lisa? And I went, my dad got so mad. He slammed on the brakes, whips the car around, goes back where Lisa is sobbing in the parking lot. She always was a crybaby. My parents had two kids, and it took them a while to realize that one of us was missing. This shepherd in the story has 100 sheep, and yet immediately he realizes that one of them is missing. And not only does he recognize that the sheep is missing, he cares, right? Jesus says he goes out on this like search and rescue mission. I don't know if you noticed, but Jesus said he went out to search for the sheep until he found it. Like, he wasn't going to quit. He's going to just keep searching until he got that sheep back. And I'm just like, it's a weird story. Why? It's just a sheep. You know, a sheep can be replaced. You wait till spring, you got like 12 baby sheep running around. We got 111 now, we're good. You know, it's not that big a deal. But not in the mind of this shepherd. In the mind of this shepherd, this sheep cannot be replaced. Do you know why? Because Jesus is not really telling a story about a shepherd and a sheep. This story is a metaphor. And in the story, the shepherd represents God, and the sheep represents, well, you. And the point of Jesus' story is, it doesn't matter. That's the whole point. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter why you wandered away from God. It doesn't matter where you wandered off to. It doesn't matter what you've done. What matters is that you are still loved with a perfect love. And so you need to be found. Right? You need to be found. And that's why a lost sheep can't be replaced. Now, I've got two kids of my own now. I've got a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. And if one of my two kids wandered off, I would not say to my wife, we could make another one. right? Not when it's your kid, right? Maybe a sheep, but not your kid, right? And we actually had this happen to us, sort of, a couple years ago. We went to this water park in near Virginia Beach where we were living, and this water park had a series of kiddie pools, which unfortunately was all we could do because our kids were like 5 and 3, and so we were in this one kiddie pool, like the size of this room maybe, like slides and ropes and all that kind of stuff, and so we played in that one for a while, and then we had to go ahead and go up to the sidewalk, and we had to walk maybe 100 yards to the next kiddie pool. We went in there, playing with all the stuff in there, and then went up to the sidewalk, walked another 100 yards, and went down to this third one. This third kiddie pool had this big yellow slide, rope ladder to get to the top, and my kids loved it. And so they went up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down. And finally, my wife was like, okay, I am going to go stand under that mushroom shower umbrella thing. Like, that's cool, go ahead. So she walks off. My son comes down, and he goes, where's mommy? Where's mommy? And I said, she went under the mushroom shower umbrella thingy. And he said, can I go get her? I said, yeah, go ahead. So he runs off, and my daughter proceeds to go up, down, up, down, up, down, about 15,000 times, like unstoppable. And so finally I'm like, okay, seriously, Marissa, let's go get Dawson. Come on. And so we walk over, and my wife is standing under the mushroom shower umbrella thingy. And I said, hey, where's Dawson? And she said, he's with you. And I said, no, I sent him over here like probably like 7 minutes ago. And she's like, well, I haven't seen him. As a parent, your first instinct is just to freak out. Like, you start imagining worst case scenarios and things you've heard in the news. But I'm like, Vincent, stop. It's a kiddie pool. Like, he got distracted. And so I'm like, he's here somewhere. Where is that kid? There's lots of kids, but I did not see him. I'm like, all right, he's got light brown hair. Where's some light brown hair? Light brown hair, light brown hair. He's wearing a blue bathing suit. Where's a blue bathing suit? Blue bathing suit, blue bathing suit. Maybe he's in one of the slides. Is he in one? Man, I got to tell you, my heart started racing. My head was pounding. My throat clenched up. I mean, like, I am, like, now freaking out. I mean, it's been 10 minutes at least. And so what I did was I ran up to the sidewalk so I could get an overview of the pool. And I am looking. I am, like, light brown hair, blue bathing suit. He's got to be one of these slides. Light brown hair, blue bathing suit. And, man, I'm looking, like, down and up the sidewalks. And I realized in that moment, I'm like, I think I would rather die than not have my son, man. And like, I am freaking out. And I look up, and there it's crowded. I mean, there's hundreds. There might have been over 1,000 people just on this sidewalk. And it's thick with people. But I thought way down the sidewalk, I might have seen like this kid running through the crowd. And it, maybe it was brown hair, but I wasn't sure. And I'm very embarrassed to tell you this, especially since we're meeting for the first time. But I'll just be honest. And what I did was I started yelling. And so I was like, Dawson! Dawson! Is that you, Dawson? And so this kid finally hears me, and he looks up through the crowd, and it was him. And he bursts into tears, and he starts running through the crowd, and I start running through the crowd. I'm like pushing people over, old ladies. It was actually very romantic, kind of. And so finally we get to each other, and he dives into my arms, and I held him, and he is crying. I said, buddy, where were you? What happened? And he said, you said mommy went under the mushrooms, and I went to the other pool down there to get her. And I was like, oh. Man, no, I'm sorry, not the one in the other pool, the one in this pool. And he said, oh, and so I held him, and I held him, and I realized in that moment that I understood what it's like to be God. Those feelings I had experienced, those thoughts, am I ever going to see my son again? Will I ever hold my son again? In those moments, when that's how God had felt about me, those first 20 years of my life when I was just wandering around, his kid, without him. That's how God feels about you if you've wandered away from him and are without him. Because he loves you with this perfect love. I think there's this verse in the Old Testament. The Bible's divided into books, and there's this book called Jeremiah. And in Jeremiah, there's this like emotion-laden passage where God says, oh, my agony, my agony. Oh, my anguish. My heart pounds within me. I cannot keep silent. And you read that and you're like, whoa, what is God like going crazy about? And then you keep reading, and what it says is God says, my children are fools. They are senseless children who have no understanding. And he talks about how we've drifted away from him. We wander away from him. And then God ends by saying this. He says, if you will return. Return to me. If you'll return, return to me. It's like God saying, come on home. come on home. And that's why a lost sheep can't be replaced, because it's not a sheep, right? Actually, Jesus tells these three stories in a row. The third story is about the son. Some of you may have grew up in church. Not like me, but I didn't. But if you did, maybe you remember the story of the prodigal son. This prodigal son story, the idea is that the son has this great father. And despite having a great father, he just decides to reject him. And in fact, he takes half his money and leaves home, runs away. And he goes off and he lives in this distant land, rebelling against everything his father stands for, everything his father is. Until finally he runs out of money and hits rock bottom, and he decides to go home. And he thinks, there's absolutely no way my father would ever accept me back. But maybe he'd let me work for him. Maybe I could get like a job working in his fields. And so he starts going home. What he doesn't know is that his father, since the first moment he left, has been sitting on the porch, the front porch, day after day after day, staring down the street, hoping on hope that one day his son would return. And when finally that day arrives and he just sees this shadow and he thinks it may be his son, Jesus says in the story, Jesus says he bolts. Man, he just starts running down the street, and he gets to his son and he just holds him and he hugs him and he forgives him and he throws this humongous party. And people hear that story, like the religious leaders back in Jesus' time who kept accusing him of, why are you hanging out with these people? They would hear that story and they're like, why? Even today people hear that story and they're like, why? Why does the father run? Why the hug? Why the forgiveness? Why the party? I mean, the son was sinful. The son spit in his father's face. The son took his money. Why? Do you know what the answer is? It was his son. It was his son. That's why. Man, have you ever lost your kid? Have you ever felt those emotions? Have you ever thought those thoughts? I don't know if I'll ever see him again. I don't know if I'll ever hold him again. I would rather die than not be with him. Well, God has. And in Jesus, God chose to die so that you could be with him. What I learned as I read through the Bible in that dorm room was that not only was it true, which I learned in the law library, but in my dorm room I learned that Jesus was all about loving and reaching out to and dying for and forgiving and changing the lives of bad people. And I realized that meant Jesus was all about loving and reaching out to and dying for and forgiving and changing the life of me. And I decided, to the shock of every single person who knew me, to become a Christian. The funny thing was, as far as I know, I still had never met one. Again, I probably had, but I'd never talked to anybody. I couldn't have named one single Christian. I didn't know any. I didn't know who any were. And I had still never gone to church. And I'm like, now decided I want to be a Christian. So a few weeks later, I went to church for the first time. And I just have to be honest and tell you, it was like the weirdest experience of my life. Because outside, it was like 1990, and it was like normal life and stuff. And then I went through what I thought was the front door of the church, but it actually turned out to be this weird time warp where I was like, and I come in, and it's like everything changed. It was like everybody's wearing suits, and I'm dressed, actually, probably not this good, but everybody's wearing like suits and stuff, and I was like, stupid, stupid, stupid. By that point, I had read through, like, I think the entire Bible, maybe, but I had missed the dress code verse, and I was like, how did I not know this? And then I start looking around, and I thought I didn't know a Christian, but everyone looked oddly familiar to me. And I'm like, this is really weird. And then I realized why. It was because they had all been recognized recently by Willard Scott on the Today Show for celebrating their 100th birthday. It was like, I looked around, and I'm like, there is no one within 40 years of my age here. What is going on? And then I sit down on this hard wooden bench, and I'm like, why? You guys know that there's more comfortable furniture available in this world. Why? And they start playing music, and I'm like, what the? Serious? This is the music? It's like organs and stuff, and I'm like, why? Why? And then the preacher starts talking, and I think I have a relatively good vocabulary, but I don't know what he's saying. I'm like, note to self, what is propitiation? I'm like, I just don't know. And I left that place, and I thought, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can go back to church. But I did. I went back to that church for the next like 3 years. Every single Sunday I went. And I kept going. And eventually I decided to become a pastor. Again, major shock to everyone who knew me. I left this whole law school thing and went to seminary and became a pastor. But it was just because I just wanted so much to share what I had discovered. I mean, God was doing such like amazing things in my life. I was like, I want to be able to share that with people. And so I became a pastor. And then after a few years of becoming a pastor, I decided to start a church. Which the deal there was, part of it honestly was, I wanted to start a church so there was one I could fit in. And I was just like, I can't fit in any church that I can find. I don't relate to them. And so I want a church like that that would work for me, which is kind of selfish. But the other thing is, I had just become a little bit disillusioned, I guess, with churches. Because as I kind of started living as a Christian, what I discovered is that the church had become known for like almost the exact opposite of what Jesus was known for. What Jesus was known for, what he was killed for, was hanging around with bad people and showing God's love to the worst people. But the church become known as a place where like the bad people, the sinful people, the messed up people like me, like you don't go to church. I heard this story, and unfortunately this is a true story, about this woman who went to see a counselor in Chicago, and he's a counselor who works with a down and out. And she sat in front of him and she said, well, I guess my problem is that I have a drug addiction. And he nodded because he had heard that thousands of times. It's normal. And she said, well, it's worse than that. I prostitute myself to get money to support my drug habit. And he later said, I nodded because I'd heard that hundreds of times. But then she said, okay, if I'm going to be honest, it's a lot worse than that. You see, I have a 2-year-old baby daughter, and I learned that I can make more money in like an hour with my daughter than I can in a week. And so I actually I prostitute my baby daughter to make money to support my drug habit. And this counselor said, he said I didn't knock, 'cause I had never heard anything like that in my life. He said I didn't know what to say, and I just sat there for a while just quiet. And he said, finally, I just said the first thing that came to mind. I said, have you thought of going to a church for help? And he said, I will never forget the look of shock that came over her face as she said, church? Why would I ever go there? I already feel horrible about myself. They just make me feel worse. And that is the weirdest thing, the saddest thing, because that lady would have been drawn to Jesus, and Jesus would have wanted to hang out with her. See, story after story in the Bible with people like that, with problems like that, wanting to be around Jesus. And the reason was because Jesus didn't make people feel worse. He made them feel loved. And that's what changed their lives. See, Jesus knew a secret that somewhere along the line churches have lost. Jesus knew that lives are not changed by rejecting people for what they've done. They're changed by accepting people for who they are. Lives aren't changed by making people feel guilty, but by making them feel loved. Lives aren't changed by pointing out people's sins, but by pointing the way to hope. And Jesus wouldn't have made that lady feel worse. He would have made her feel loved. And the really sad part is, I think the church should be known for what Jesus was known for, right? In fact, in the Bible, I don't know if you know this, but the church is called the body of Christ. That's what the church is actually called, the body of Christ. Sounds kind of weird, but the idea is that we are Jesus to the world. We get to represent Jesus to our community. And so we should be known for what Jesus was known for. But the church has become known for the opposite. And so I decided, man, I want to start a church where I can fit in, that you know, just the music and stuff like connects with me. And so I'm being selfish, but at the same time, I want to start a church that will be like Jesus, as best as we won't be perfect, but that will be like Jesus. And so 12 years ago, I started this church in Virginia Beach, Virginia, and we started with 4 people. It's very easy to know how many people are in your church when you have 4 people. We had 4, and very quickly, in a couple of years, it grew to almost 1,000 people, and it was just amazing. It still is. Just lives were changed there by God. All we did was just point people to his perfect love. And we let people know, if you come here, you will not be judged. You will not be condemned. You'll be loved, and you'll be appreciated. And you'll be invited to be authentic, to be real. Not just with us, but with God. because when we're real with God, that gives Him the opportunity to come into our lives and to really do something and to change us. And so I'm here tonight to tell you that this church is going to be the same thing. Okay? What we're inviting you tonight is to a place where you will not be judged and you will not be condemned, where you'll be loved and you'll be appreciated. And a place where we're going to invite you to be authentic and real with us and with each other, but also with God. So that we can see, is His love really perfect? And does it really have the power to change me? And I think you'll find it does. I think you will. And so, this is it. And this is what we're inviting you to, is kind of joining with us and going on this journey together. This journey for people who are willing to admit, you know, one of our sayings is that no perfect people are allowed. And so the idea is, if you think you're perfect and got your act together, you're just not going to do well here because you're not. You're just not being real. But if you're willing to admit that you're a bad person and that you need some help and you need some change, we all do, then we'd love to have you kind of on this journey with us. Because this is church for people who don't like church. It's church for the bad, which means we can all be a part of it. And so here's what I want to say, I guess, to you is, if you're off wandering, kind of lost, just out there wandering, you need to know that God is searching for you. And He will seek you until He finds you. And if you would just let yourself be found. And if you've rejected God and just taken off in the other direction and you've lived in rebellion against Him and you think you could never go home, what I want you to know, because it's true, is that God has been sitting on His front porch, staring down the street, hoping on hope that one day you'll just take a step towards home. And if you do, He'll bolt. He will. And He will hold you and He will throw a party. And if you would just let yourself come on home, it would change everything for you. So that's what we're going to do here. You know, in these weeks and months and years to come, we're going to just try to figure out together, what does it even look like to come home? How do you let God be your God? Does Jesus really love imperfect people? And does His love really have the power to change our lives? And how does that work? We'll just kind of explore that together as we go on this journey that we're going to call Birth.